that's the theme that you hear when we talk about movies every Monday morning. That's with Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com joining me each week to talk about movies. And this is our first exclusive. The guys are here, Colin and Eric. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
We didn't have enough time during the show to get to some of the stuff that we wanted to get to. But this is our first, Monday morning movie review exclusive podcast.
Cool.
This is only available on podcast. So the people that are listening to this right now are cool.
Yeah.
They're automatically cool as hell. So you know, if you're listening to this right now, you know that you should get our podcasts, which are available at WGNRadio.com, and you can subscribe, which you probably did if you're listening to this, at iTunes. And Eric and Colin join me every week. And we talked about our best movies and our worst movies on the show, which is also available on podcast. But this is an extra thing that people who don't have the podcast are not going to be able to hear. So you are very cool. So let's recap our top 20 movies of 2015. First of all, how long have we been doing this? You guys have been
coming down here and doing this?
Yeah.
Since 2002.
That
was
the
first
time.
2002 was the first time.
Yeah.
All right, cool. It's a long time, man.
Yeah.
That's 13 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
They didn't have podcasts back then.
They did not have podcasts. We would have had to have been more succinct in our talking. All right, well, why don't we do this? We picked our 20 favorite films of 2015. We talked about them on the air, and we'll do a little recap here. And so let me start. I'll do my top 20. This is me, Nick DiGilio, my top 20. Number 20 is 99 Homes. Number 19, The Big Short. Number 18, Star Wars, The Force Awakens. Yes, it made my top 20. Number 17, Creed. Number 16, Room. 15, Brooklyn. 14, It Follows. 13, Spotlight. 12, Queen of Earth. 11, Goodnight, Mommy. My top 10 movies of 2015. Number 10, Joy. Number 9, Anomalisa. Number 8, Mississippi Grind. Number 7, Inside Out. Number 6, James White. Number 5, White God. Number 4, The Walk. Number 3, The Revenant. Number 2, The Hateful Eight. And number 1, Mad Max Fury Road. Those were my top 20 movies. Colin?
20, Chirac. 19, Mustang. 18, Mississippi Grind. 17, Bone Tomahawk. 16, It Follows. 15, The Martian. 14, Love and Mercy. 13, Listen to Me, Marlon. 12, Ex Machina. 11, The End of the Tour. Number 10, Goodnight, Mommy. 9, Cartel Land. 8, Brooklyn. 7, World of Tomorrow. 6, 45 Years. 5, Star Wars, The Force Awakens. 4, Room. 3, Spotlight. 2, Inside Out. 1, Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay, and Eric?
Eric, it's my name.
Yeah.
Number 20, The Hunting Ground. 19, The Walk. 18, Listen to Me, Marlon. 17, Mississippi Grind. 16, 45 Years. 15, The Martian. 14, Brooklyn. 13, Creed. 12, Bridge of Spies. 11, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation. 10, Star Wars, The Force Awakens. 9, Spring. 8, The Big Short. 7, Call Me Lucky. 6, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. 5, Room. 4, Steve Jobs. 3, Spotlight. 2, Inside Out. And 1, Mad Max Fury Road.
Now, you have probably noticed that Mad Max Fury Road is number one on all three of our lists as the best film of 2015. And as we mentioned on the regular show, that has not happened since 2003 when all three of us chose The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
So this is 2 years in a row that you and I have had the number one.
Last year we had Interstellar.
That's right.
That's right, Interstellar. And we have to make plans for February.
Yes, we do.
To go to the Music Box to see it in 70mm.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Oh, man. So Mad Max Fury Road, before we talk a little bit, why we all three chose it as the best film of the year. You guys, this is, I don't think, has ever happened. You guys have the same top three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spotlight, Inside Out, and then Mad Max.
And we were so close to having the same top four. Room and Steve Jobs, I went back and forth.
Oh, okay.
Tomorrow it might be four. I don't know.
All right. All right. Well, what was it? You see, this has never happened. You guys obviously didn't confer beforehand.
Nope.
Okay. That's interesting. Well, let's just go around real quick here. Mad Max Fury Road. Colin, why is it for you the best film of 2015?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm a huge George Miller fan, always have been. I just admire the way this guy just puts his films together, almost in the same way Zemeckis does, where every single detail is paid off later down the road. But his is such a way that it's like it's, you know, it's a little harder to describe. When you watch something like this and you watch something like Babe, Pig in the City or The Road Warrior, and you see all these details in this world that he creates and how he sets up the rules of this world and how he introduces characters within this world. I mean, I think George Miller is, you know, he's known for being this great, you know, visual stylist and you know, meticulous filmmaker, but I don't think he gets enough credit as a screenwriter. What Mad Max Fury Road just kind of exemplifies all of his talents as a director, and really just, you know, I think a lot of people sort of, I've heard people criticize the movie that, you know, oh, the it doesn't have much of a story and the dialogue is too, is you know, nobody says it, you know, Mad Max never says anything. Well, he never did. And by the way, there is a story there, but it doesn't set everything up in the first 10 minutes. It's, you know, the story is always gradually evolving. It's not as, you know, first act, second act, third act kind of thing. And aside from all that, it's just an incredibly, you know, unrelenting, visceral experience that is, you know, mayhem has never been this much fun. You know, it's like I every time I watch this movie, I'm in awe of what's on the screen, the detail, how this, you know, the way this world works. You know, you could tell Miller has a passion for this. And it's not just a victory lap. He really, this is, you know, from a real artist. This is not just an action director, you know, pumped up on testosterone. This is a guy who's really knows how to do this stuff and do it well. And he's never been better. So,
okay. Eric, why would you choose it as number one?
Well, I mean, the thing is that over the years, I've always sort of gravitated when making these best of lists, the idea that a movie like this is much tougher to pull off than, say, a movie like 45 Years. I know some people argue that the complex emotions of a film like that are kind of tough to pull off in, you know, a chamber piece, so to speak. But you have to think about how many details go into a film like this and how often filmmakers are trying to pull off something like this. Usually they're doing it for, you know, it's a tentpole picture, a summer blockbuster and whatnot, and they have a lot of toys to play with and a lot of special effects and whatnot. And usually they you know, they do what they can, and most of them fail. And so to have not just a, you know, a really good chase film, but one of the best chase films that's ever been made. And the fact that the series has, like Colin says, evolved in different ways, and that George Miller is constantly challenging himself with sequels. No one, I don't know if anyone does sequels better than George Miller does, and that includes Happy Feet 2 for all the haters out there. It's not as good as Happy Feet, but it's still really damn good. And this movie is just sort of it's unrelenting in the best possible way. Like, it gives you, you know, just enough of the story through the characters' eyes. I don't know if we have even mentioned Charlize Theron yet, who I do believe is going to get nominated for an Academy Award.
And she should.
Yes, mm-hmm. For this role. I mean, the sort of the evolution of the female heroine is really, I mean, 2015 is quite an extraordinary year for, you know, in big films like this, to Brie Larson in Room and back to Rey in Star Wars The Force Awakens. There, you know, to see a character like this and essentially take over the film in a way from Max. Max is almost a supporting character in his own movie because of her. And like Colin said, there is a story there, and it does have an emotional climax to it. And you care about the characters, you know, even if they are characters of little speech. We haven't even mentioned what's his face?
Nicholas Holt.
Nicholas Holt. Yeah. We haven't mentioned him and his arc throughout the movie, and the arc of the mistresses, the women in the film. This is an incredible piece of work, and the action sequences are untouched they're untouched throughout this year and throughout, you know, pretty much history. So why isn't this number one? Seriously. Yeah.
Well, I echo everything you guys said. I, you know, clearly flipped my mind when I saw this movie. I've never seen a movie three times in 24 hours. But when this movie opened, I saw it three times in 24 hours. I have now seen it. The last viewing of it was number 27.
Holy cow.
When it was the first time I saw it, when it was over, I was like, I don't even know where to begin. And I went back 3 hours later, and I saw it again. And I, too, like you, Colin, I'm a huge George Miller fan. I think George Miller is an incredible director. The only movie that he ever directed that I was not thrilled with is The Witches of Eastwick. That's the only one he ever directed. And then, oddly, when I saw the Robert Rodriguez, and I felt good about myself. When Robert Rodriguez had him on director's chair.
Yeah, yeah.
He said his only unpleasant experience ever was The Witches of Eastwick. And I was like, well, you see.
Yeah.
you know, you're talking about the action sequence in this movie. Astounding. Absolutely astounding. And you know, this movie opens with like a 15-minute sequence that would close most great action movies. Spectacularly. Yeah. That's how the movie starts. And yeah. It just gets better from there. I think this movie is about a lot of things. I think the acting is tremendous. You mentioned Charlize Theron. I think Tom Hardy's really good in this movie as well. Everybody is really good in it. The level of imagination in two frames of this movie, you could take two frames of this movie and go, all right, look at this. Look at all the imagination in this one frame. And you can put it up against an entire movie. And there's more detail and more imagination in that. You know, you discover more. I mean, I've seen it 27 times, and I discover new things every time I watch it. I watch different things. It's an incredible visceral experience. It is filmmaking of the highest order. I mean, this is just remarkable filmmaking. The guy is 71 years old and made a movie that looks like it was made by a 20-year-old, a brilliant 20-year-old. And so on every level, I mean, to me, this is pure cinema, man. I mean, this is like you go to see, it's kinetic filmmaking, it's brilliant filmmaking, it's great storytelling. Everything about Mad Max Fury Road is damn near perfect. And I want to quickly, before we get to our subcategories, I just want to quickly say that one of the times that, okay, the second time that I went of my 3-day weekend of seeing it in 3D and IMAX in the fall when they re-released it.
Yeah.
And Colin, you and I went one of those times together. the second viewing, that was the first night because that was a Friday.
Yeah.
And then on a Saturday I went again, and then on a Sunday I went again. On Saturday, the second time I'd seen it in 3D IMAX in a day, I got home and I turned on cable. A Terminator 2 was on. Okay, now Terminator 2, a classic action movie, considered one of the best of all time. Remarkable. Still, you watch it, it kicks almighty ass. I'm watching, you know, an hour and a half out of seeing Mad Max Fury Road, I'm watching Terminator 2, which is considered, you know, gold standard in terms of big, crazy action movies and great big action sequences. I'm watching the movie, and it's the scene, the insane scene, where they've got like the big truck, and the helicopter's flying behind it, and the helicopter smashes into the back of the truck and all that stuff. And I was like, oh, that's quaint. That was cute. That was really, really cute. I've been ruined. Ruined for action movies. Yeah. Thank you, George Miller. Because even like when I was watching Mission Impossible,
yeah.
And I loved it. I loved what the hell is it called?
Rogue Nation.
Sorry, I kept Ghost. I loved Rogue Nation. Yeah. I really did. It's a tremendous action movie. But again, I watched it. And I was like, that was awesome. But man.
Well, see, I had sort of the opposite reaction to that because I'm just like, well, this movie is so good that I could say it would have been the best action film of the year if not for Mad Max.
Yeah.
I was just that's what I'm talking about when I see the exemplary filmmaking of that order.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
To have what is essentially a popcorn movie,
right.
Basically, elevated to a high level of art.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be said for this and Star Wars and Mission Impossible this year in that you know, these are three films that went out of their way to avoid CGI.
Absolutely.
To avoid doing everything in front of a green screen.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the films just became all the more richer for that because the worlds were brought to life in a way that we're not used to seeing.
I'm glad you mentioned that because one of the reasons why I love the Star Wars movie as much as I did is because... And one of the reasons I hated the prequels as much as I did is that because they just didn't, there was just a falseness to them. Mm-hmm. I couldn't emotionally even become involved in them. But the stuff was real in Force Awakens. I mean, obviously there's CGI in it, and there's effects mm-hmm. in it, but like the locations are real. They're like in a real desert. And it's like, and you know, a lot of the effects are practical, and that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And the stuff that they do in Mad Max, I if they don't create a stunt category for the Academy Awards, based on this movie.
And you consider how long he's been making this movie. Yeah. I remember being at, I was at the Las Vegas Theater Convention, CinemaCon, a few years ago. And they were showing a screening of The Dictator, the Sacha Baron Cohen movie. Okay,
right.
And a fellow critic, a fellow colleague came over to me while we were waiting, after we got out of this movie, and he was showing me pictures of the set of Mad Max Fury Road back then.
Wow.
Okay, he was like, look at this. This is happening right now. And I'm like, what is that? He's like, that's Mad Max, the new Mad Max movie in the desert. And it was the vehicles. It was the vehicles.
Right, right.
And I was like, and that was back then.
Well, I remember hearing this story. And this is another story. I believe Miller told this story on the Robert Rodriguez interview. Maybe he didn't. It was someplace, because I've read everything and seen everything about this film. It's seriously one of my favorite movies of all time. I'm not kidding. Clearly, I've seen it 27 times. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. He was so dead set against doing any CGI, mm-hmm. you know, and granted there's sped up film in it and the cars aren't going maybe as fast, but these are real guys jumping off of vehicles in the middle of the desert and bouncing on the ground and jumping from one vehicle to another and doing incredible mm-hmm. stunts. You know, the film might be sped up and things like that, but those are real guys who are doing it. And many of them, when they're doing it at full speed, are harnessed, and those are CGI'd out, but it's still a real dude jumping off of a car going 65 miles an hour. But he was so upset because when he was a kid, he went to the circus. He grew up in a small town in Australia, and this circus came into town, and they set up their tent. He was in this small town, and it was a big deal, you know, going to the circus. Here's this little George Miller, and he's and I'm picturing him with the glasses and the scarf, and he's got gray hair too at this time, and he goes to the circus and he sees these guys doing this act on these big long poles. And they're bending the poles. They're flinging the poles. They're on top of the poles, back and forth. And they're jumping from pole to pole. And he was so mesmerized by this as a kid. It was something that just you know we all have those moments where something burns into our subconscious mm-hmm. as a kid that we'll never forget and that we are amazed by.
Yeah.
And he so wanted this to be in the movie. And you know, like a lot of the consultants were like, you know, there's no way you're going to do it. You're going to have to CGI this. And he's like, I don't want to CGI it. I don't want to CGI it. They're like, George, just CGI it. You know, I mean, it's everybody does this.
Yeah.
And he's like, I know, but I want guys on poles flying around. And he's like, they're like, no, you got to do it in CGI. So the director of photography, the great John Seale, who by the way also shot, I want to mention, he shot a lot of great movies, but he shot The Hitcher, which is another great road movie. So anyway, Seale and a bunch of the stunt coordinator and FX guys, they don't tell George Miller this, okay? So he's prepping for the day, and they're in the middle of the desert, and I don't know where they must have shot it, in Australia, New Zealand, right?
Namibia,
was it?
Yeah.
Okay, I should know that. I've seen it 27 times. So they're in the middle of the desert and they're talking, and all of a sudden he hears this roar. Miller hears this roar and he sees way in the distance. This could have been a shot in the movie. Like way in the distance, he sees like a shadowy group of like vehicles. And he's like, what the hell is going on? And he knows like that there wasn't like a rehearsal or anything scheduled. Nothing was like, what's going on? And he looks and slowly appearing, moving towards him are like four vehicles and guys on poles swinging back and forth as they come closer to him. So he's just like, here's this dream coming true for him, and they made it happen.
Yeah.
And like he's like watching this, and he talked about this as like this incredible, like beautiful, like one of the greatest things he's ever seen in his life. Like this dream came true, and nobody told him about it. I don't know how they kept it from him. Nobody told him about it, and then suddenly there are these vehicles coming towards him in the desert, and he sees actual guys jumping around on poles, and he put it in the movie. Just the best movie of the year. Best movie of the year.
Yep.
Okay, let's get to our subcategories, which we do every year. And, Colin, you always put this list together.
Yeah.
We added a couple here. Now, I don't know. My list might be in a different order than yours is. So let's start off. Colin, you start this off.
Okay.
What's the first one on your list, and you tell us your choice?
Best funniest gags.
Best or funniest gags. Okay.
All right. So I have What We Do in the Shadows, Not Getting Let Into the Club, which is, I think, hilarious. They have to be invited in because they're vampires.
Okay.
The door having to be nailed shut in Hateful Eight. Every time.
Michael Madsen's
voice off screen is just brilliant.
That's another thing about that. Another great thing about that movie, and I love that movie. I love it more than you guys do, is that only Quentin Tarantino could get away with a total of 15 minutes of footage dedicated to nailing a door shut.
Yes. That's like, not far off.
No, it's not. It's not. Is that?
Oh, and one of the movies that the characters in Me and Earl and the Dying Girl create, instead of Midnight Cowboy, it's 2:48 p.m. Cowboy,
right?
Which I think is brilliant.
Okay, those are your funniest funniest gags. I only picked one, but go ahead.
I got two, but they're both from What We Do in the Shadows. One is We're Werewolves, Not Swearwolves. And the other one is when Jermaine Clement's character is depressed and he says, leave me alone to do my dark bidding. I'm bidding on a table on eBay.
Right. That was a funny-ass movie,
yes,
man.
Yep.
Okay, my favorite, I picked one, but my favorite funny gag was I loved all of the Michael Pena flashbacks in Ant-Man.
Oh, the
like the where they would do they'd do the flashbacks and it was Pena's voice.
Right,
I loved that. And that you know, as I said, I was convinced that McKay wrote that sequence because
and they use the same music from Jackie Brown that Tarantino used.
That's right, that's right. But I was convinced of that because they do that in Drunk History. That's like the whole basis for Drunk History. Okay, next.
Okay, best lines of dialogue or favorite dialogue exchange. I had a tough time with this one.
Yeah.
Witness Me from Mad Max. I think is great. Mm. And then Brad Pitt in The Big Short just suddenly announcing, I have to get a high colonic.
Yeah.
Just made me laugh, just like out of nowhere.
Okay.
There's an entire sequence in the second act of Steve Jobs where Michael Fassbender and Jeff Daniels are having this conversation about how he got fired. And that entire sequence, I'm just mesmerized by it.
Yeah. Okay. I couldn't really pick a specific moment, but the of dialogue exchange, but it's Hateful Eight, which is, you know, I mean, mostly dialogue driven anyway. I really thought the scene, I guess I can't give it away, but it involved the Lincoln letter when they're all eating stew, and a revelation comes out, and Walton Goggins,
yes,
who is spectacular in the movie. Mm-hmm. I just love that this realization that Kurt Russell has to come to, but the dialogue is so beautifully built up and the reveal is so great. It's one of my favorite sequences. Okay.
Yeah. Best Mad Max action scene. I had to do a separate one because if I did just best action scene, we'd all have the same thing. Yeah. So I had to pay lip service.
Or at least they'd be from the same movie.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah. So my favorite one is the finale, the one at the end. Because it's got an emotional thing with it as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I basically put the guys swinging on poles.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. I picked the motorcycle guys from Gastown.
Yeah. That's great.
That build up to that scene is so magnificent. Like every time I watch it, I'm just like, it just like the music build up, that the fact that this is the first time when they're working together, when Furiosa and Max are working together and they're just trading guns and boom, bang, boom, guys are flying. And real guys are flying on real motorcycles.
I still love that she like plays like the game of Simon, basically. Like you got to get up, down, Xbox controller, like the cheat code.
And he gets it too.
Yeah,
he's like, I got it.
I got it.
All right, best non-Mad Max action scene.
Yeah.
What do you got?
The underwater sequence in Mission Impossible.
That's what I got.
I put the opera scene in Mission Impossible.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Best movie that didn't deserve to bomb, Colin?
Bone Tomahawk or Mississippi Grind.
Okay.
The Walk.
The Walk. Yeah. That's my choice as well. All right. Best quality kill?
Splitting the guy in half in Bone Tomahawk.
Samuel Jackson does a two-gun thing in The Hateful Eight.
Mine is a tie between those two. Yeah. I'm not kidding. That's exactly a tie between those two. By the way, a lot of good quality kills in Hateful Eight. A lot of good quality kills.
There are.
All right.
All right.
Best ensemble.
Oh, okay. All right. Spotlight.
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 Yeah.
All right. Best brainless movie.
Furious 7.
Furious 7.
Furious 7. Worst, quote unquote, smart film.
Truth.
Okay.
Concussion.
By the Sea. which, by the way, is interminable.
Yes.
You know, that's a better answer.
Right. Best movies that made me hungry.
I have a few. The End of the Tour, because they eat a lot of junk food in that movie. Brooklyn, for all the spaghetti that she has to learn how to eat. And Hateful Eight, stew.
I just put Hateful Eight,
Hateful Eight, stew. I mean, it's the best looking stew ever.
Yeah, it's still good.
Okay, most underrated critically.
This is tough. Tomorrowland got a bad rap that it didn't deserve, I thought.
I put Joy.
Yeah, okay. I put Maps to the Stars, which is a movie that almost made my top 20.
Yeah.
Okay, most overrated critically?
The Gift.
Okay.
Carol.
Sorry, I chose Bridge of Spies.
Wow.
biggest surprise could be actor, director, studio.
Nick putting Star Wars in his top 20. It was Creed, but I crossed it off.
All right.
Mine is still Creed.
Mine is Creed. All right. Okay. Boy, this is weird. We're getting a lot of the same here. Biggest disappointment.
Where am I? Minions and Spectre.
Okay.
I have Avengers Age of Ultron and Spectre.
I have just Avengers Age of Ultron because I wasn't very excited about Spectre. Biggest waste of an actor and actress?
Sam Rockwell and Poltergeist.
Okay.
Christoph Waltz and Spectre.
Nick Nolte in Ridiculous 6.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Really?
Ooh. Wow. Yeah. Most romantic scene?
The End of Brooklyn.
Okay.
The I Love You apology from Brooklyn.
Okay. I said the singing of Girls Just Want to Have Fun and Emilisa. worst love story?
50 Shades of Grey.
50 Shades of Grey.
50 Shades of Grey. most sexiest shot or moment or scene or something like that.
Scene between Kate Blanchett and Rooney Mara in Carol.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I put Rebecca Ferguson, their sniper pose in Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
I pretty much just said the two chicks in Knock Knock.
Ah, okay.
that's all I'm
saying.
Don't
even know their names.
The first hit,
male fantasy gone sour.
The one that Eli Roth is having sex with,
Lorenzo
and the other
Izzo
girl.
And Anna de Armas.
They're both pretty fantastic in the first 45 minutes of that movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Best use of music?
All the Brian Eno stuff in Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
It's good. I put the disco music in The Martian.
Okay. I have a tie, or two of my favorites. I have. The unused music from the score of The Thing that was used, and the used music from the score of The Thing that was incorporated into Hateful Eight, is particularly the vomiting blood sequence. I just was so thrilled when I heard that. And then one of my favorite scenes of the film year is when they record No Vaseline, the Ice Cube from the Ice Cube solo album in Straight Outta Compton, and the reaction. to it. That is just, No Vaseline happens to be my favorite Ice Cube solo song, and that was I love that. Okay. Favorite tearjerker moment?
The end of Inside Out.
I got three. I put the end of Inside Out, I put the hospital scene in Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, and the moment that Jacob Tremblay sees the dog in Room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got two. I said the bathroom scene in James White. And Bing Bong, the Bing Bong scene in Inside Out. And the ending killed me too, but the Bing Bong scene, there was just something that hit me even more.
Yeah.
Favorite bad movie?
Jupiter Ascending.
See, I didn't choose that because it's not a bad movie.
That's why this category is tough.
This is a tough one.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of anything else, really.
So I put Ted 2.
I said Victor Frankenstein, which is a bad movie, but I enjoyed it. Worst actor.
Okay. So we're down. Okay.
Okay.
That's all right.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so Jamie Dornan, 50 Shades of Grey.
Okay.
Ryan Shoes, The Gallows.
That's my choice. I just put the dude in The Gallows because I didn't know his name.
His name is Ryan Shoes.
Horrible.
The worst.
Worst actress.
Jennifer Lopez, The Boy Next Door.
That's what I got.
Emilia Clarke, Terminator Genesis.
Best monologue.
Jennifer Jason Leigh, The Hateful Eight.
Rocky talking about Adrian in Creed.
Elizabeth Moss in Queen of Earth. And what she thinks of the kid from Almost Famous.
Mm-hmm.
Most nail-binding moment. I think we're all going to agree on this one, I would guess.
The last hour of The Walk.
Oh, God.
It's good. Yeah,
No, I didn't choose that. Go ahead.
The Escape from Room.
That's what I chose, too.
Oh, yeah.
But the last.
But, yeah, the last, geez. I think I was just too busy, crap in my pants during that. Okay, worst casting choice.
The entire cast of Chappie.
Okay.
That's good. Jai Courtney as Kyle Reese for Terminator Genesis.
I chose Emma Stone in Aloha because she's so Asian.
Yes.
Okay, worst faith-based film? I don't know.
Do You Believe?
Okay.
Yeah, the only one that even came close was Aloft.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
It's got religious stuff in it.
Best ending or final moment?
For me, the last shot of Star Wars.
Okay.
Mm, 45 years.
I chose the final shot of Goodnight Mommy because they hold it so long that it becomes funny and then terrifying and then funny and then, oh, hell no. Worst film based on a true story?
Freeheld.
Okay.
True story.
I chose Concussion.
Yeah.
Movie that deserved more awards attention?
End of the Tour, Mississippi Grind.
Okay.
Those are my two there.
Call Me Lucky.
I chose The Walk. Mm. Best retro film going experience, Hateful Eight 70mm by far. Mm. What do you guys?
Well, that's a great choice. I didn't even think about that, but you're right. That's a good one. I actually put your screening of The Road Warrior.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I chose The Road Warrior, but not your screening. I saw it at South by Southwest with George Miller in attendance and showing a preview clip of Fury Road.
Yeah, see, that's cooler than my screening.
Yeah, sorry.
All right. Best actor?
Okay, where am I? Okay, best actor. I put Jason Segel, The End of the Tour.
Okay.
Jacob Tremblay from Room.
Christopher Abbott I was going to say Jack White. okay, next.
Best actress?
Mm-hmm.
Charlotte Rampling, 45 years. Mm.
Charlotte Rampling, 45 years.
Elizabeth Moss, Queen of Earth. Supporting actor?
Sylvester Stallone, Creed.
Sylvester Stallone, Creed.
Wow, Sylvester Stallone, Creed. All right. Supporting actress?
Jennifer Jason Leigh, Hateful Eight.
Jennifer Jason Leigh, Hateful Eight.
Hell, what the hell, man? Yeah. Best director. Do we even have to?
We'll just say it all.
George Miller. And best score?
Mad Max.
What do you?
Mad Max.
Mad Max. Yeah. Wow. All right.
And then the last one.
Yes, what we're looking forward to in 2016.
Right.
All right, Colin, go.
Magical Creatures and Where to Find Them, Ghostbusters, the BFG, and Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
Okay.
Yeah, looking forward to Star Wars and the BFG and Robert Zemeckis' untitled World War II film with Brad Pitt and Marianne Cotillard.
Okay, mine is Knight of Cups, Midnight Special, Jeff Nichols' latest sci-fi film. I'm looking forward to Ghostbusters. I've got the Pitt Zemeckis World War II movie on my list, too. I'm also looking forward to The Nice Guys.
The Shane Black.
Shane Black movie. Everybody Wants Some, the follow-up to
Linklater's.
To Linklater's follow-up to one of the best movies ever, Dazed and Confused. And then Kubo and the Two Strings.
Oh, yeah. God,
which
not
looks
that
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I picked, the other one that I picked was Keanu, which is the first official Key and Peele movie.
Ah, yes.
It's coming out in November. So,
okay.
And their dog is named Keanu.
All
right. Well, there you go. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
It was a great year. 2015 was a great year. We'll do it all again in 2016.
Yeah.
By the way, Colin, you are taking a little time off.
A little time. Yep.
And you'll be back with us in March, beginning of March.
Yep.
Jim Laskowski is going to be joining Colin and I,
right.
Or I'm sorry, Eric and I, next week. And Colin, have a great time off.
Thank you.
We'll get you back in March, and we'll do this all again next year. This is a exclusive podcasting thing. We thank you for podcasting it and just listening to the podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
We love it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you for. I don't have to take a break. Hey, I'm not taking a break. I'm leaving.
We're still podcasting.
See ya. We're going to continue talking while you listen to this.